Well, what do you think of when you hear the word community? Recently, my work has taken me to a number of zoos. As many of you know, I'm a biologist. And it has to be said that animals vary greatly in their communities. Some, like eagles, are fairly solitary for most of the time. But others are great builders of community. Meerkats are some of the best community builders. They live in the Kalahari Desert in South Africa in colonies of 30 or more animals. Meerkats have a highly developed social structure. They take it in turns to act as sentries on the watch for predators. And then they make a squeaking noise and everybody dives underground. Females that have never had young babysit for the lead or alpha pair in the group. Naked mole rats are perhaps not the prettiest of animals, but they have an incredible sense of community underground. They live in parts of East Africa and are the only known what are called eusocial animal mammals. Most of the eusocial animals are insects, termites, and the like. And this is the highest level of social order, where the animals cooperate to look after their young, they have overlapping generations of adults, and a caste system where some of the naked mole rats reproduce, and some are workers, like worker ants, and don't reproduce. Wolves have amazing communities. Here you can see a long line of 25 wolves. It turns out that the three at the front are old or weak, and the whole pack goes at their pace. So they go at the front to set the pace. The next few are the strongest and best male fighters, ready to defend the pack from the front if needed. Then come the female wolves, followed by another group of males, tough fighters, to defend the rear of the column. And where is the leader? Where is the leader? Well, he's right at the back of the pack to keep an eye on the whole lot. There he is in the yellow circle. Very definitely, the animal equivalent of the first shall be last. Yeah, he's there just keeping an eye on everything. But perhaps the best known social animals that we'll see around here are starlings, which are famous for their murmurations, amazing flocking behaviour. In Haddenham, you can sometimes see small murmurations. I see them out of my study window. But if you go to places like Otmoor, north of Oxford, they can be huge, sometimes tens or hundreds of thousands of birds. It seems that they do these huge swooping flocks to confuse predators. But how they do it without crashing into one another is a considerable mystery. It actually makes the aerial displays of the red arrows seem like a bit of a piece of cake, really, doesn't it? You know, the birds have won it easily. But what should a Christian community look like? Many years ago, Margot and I attended a church where the vicar was totally passionate about the congregation serving the local community. At times, I thought he slightly overdid the topic, Margot smiling at the back there. And it seemed that every sermon had the C, community word, in it. But as time has gone on, I've come to appreciate that he was actually right. If a church is to be truly effective, then it needs to serve its local community. You're not going to reach the community unless you are part of it. Bishop Graham Cray once said that a church should have its roots down and its walls down. So it should be rooted in the Bible with roots deep down, but the walls of the church should be down to the community. Too many churches have their roots down, okay, but their walls up, with huge boundaries that prevent people joining. And they have very little impact on their local communities. Often these local communities actually treat such closed churches with deep suspicion. Not surprising. The disciples Jesus chose formed a close community for around 3 years. It was not just the 12, but a group of other followers, including quite a number of women. But they certainly had their problems, to put it mildly. The Mark reading this morning illustrates one of their problems. James and John ask Jesus if they can sit at his right and left hand when they are in glory, that is, heaven. Jesus basically answers that those favored positions are not his to give, and that his Father has already prepared those seats for the people who will have them. Not too surprisingly, the other 10 disciples were very annoyed with James and John trying to get the best places and to put themselves first. And Jesus uses the event to teach his disciples an important lesson. Whoever wishes to be first among you must be your servant. And whoever wishes to be first among you must be slave of all. I guess we saw that with the wolves, with the leader taking the last position. Jesus set the example himself, saying that he had not come to be served, but to serve. Is that our attitude? There are few world leaders today that have that servant heart. But one is Jimmy Carter, the former American president. Many would say that he was not the most successful ever president. But few dispute that he had and has that servant heart. He's a very committed Christian and continued that servant ministry with the poor and others well after he ceased to be president. He's now 94 and he is still doing it. He lives a very simple life. He still lives in the same small house that he built in 1961. Which is now valued at $167,000. So not a lot. It's actually less than the value of the armoured Secret Service vehicles which are parked outside to protect him. Incredible. And even now, for 1 week a year, he and his wife go off building homes for the charity Habitat for Humanity, for poor people. If ever there was a servant leader, I think he's one. I think he is one. Okay. Our reading from 1 Peter 4 is quite short, but it gives a lot of guidance on what a Christian community should look like. So let's now have a bit of a look at it. Above all, love each other deeply. Throughout the Bible, the number one characteristic that is always lauded is love. And this is particularly the case when we come to the ministry of Jesus, and then it's carried on by Paul. So in 1 Corinthians 13, verse 13, Paul says, "These three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love." A question then, do we love each other deeply? Do we? Love covers over a multitude of sins. What does this famous saying mean? It's gone into the kind of general usage. Well, firstly, it suggests that we should be forgiving of one another. Everyone makes mistakes and misjudges things. Bearing grudges is just no good. But secondly, it implies that we should not gossip about the sins of others. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Years ago, I was between houses and staying in a small bedsit until the house purchase went through 6 weeks later. I was working at the university, so food in the week was no problem. And I spied out the fish and chip shop for Sunday lunch. But I also spotted the small local church. And I went there on my first Sunday there. After the service at coffee, an older couple came up to me, recognizing that I was new. Would I like lunch? When I got to their house, they had lots of guests for lunch. They had food on the go every week, never knowing who the guests were going to be. Incredible. When I explained my situation, they fixed me up with Sunday lunch every week at a different church family. I never needed the chip shop. Whenever I hear the word then, hospitality, it always takes me back to that small church. Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms. What gifts have you got? A lot of people would say that I can speak, write, organize things. Not bad at administration. I can survive when needed, but I'm not actually a great cook, to be absolutely honest. And I'm not naturally outgoing, so I'm not really a great pastoral person. I can do it, but it's not really my gift. But fortunately, among you, There are lots of people in the church who are better at those things. Very few people are good at everything. But whatever you have, use it. Whatever you have, use it. If anyone speaks, they should do so as one who speaks the very words of God. Now, if you're a preacher, this is probably a bit of a worrying statement. As a preacher, you do your best, you pray, do your best. But I am not sure that even the very best preachers really speak the very words of God. But I think that this can be applied more widely to all of our speaking. It is good if what we say to each other glorifies God, but we should also guard our words. Do our words honour God? If anyone serves, they should do so with the strength God provides, so that in all things God may be praised through Jesus Christ. We all serve in different ways. A few years ago, I did an exercise to count up how many people were involved in putting on one of these morning services. It is a lot more than you might think. I think probably at least 30 this morning putting on this service. Just think of it. Our music group, our people doing the coffee, our people welcoming, the sound desk, everybody. And then there are people that aren't even here, people who've put together the service schedules and publicised the thing, and then the website. And yeah, you think about it, the number of people that are involved in this is a lot. And we all need strength from God to do this work. What are we already doing? Where are we already serving? An awful lot of places. Bereavement care, the Monday Club, CAP courses for people with money difficulties, little people's children's work going on over at the centre at the moment, the community cafe, Cafe Plus, Christmas tree festival, much, much more. Much, much more. Sorry if I've forgotten your particular bit. But then you look at many of the societies and activities in the village, and you will find that there are church members actively involved there as well. You go to the U3A, sometimes I speak at the U3A. The village society. Many of the secular organisations in the village, and you will find people there, church members there. Think about the community vehicle for transporting disabled people. Again, church members very active in that. But it's not all serious stuff. The church can be fun. A recent example then, church community having fun, was Richard Digby's 80th birthday party. Happy birthday, Richard. But I guess if you wanted a model of exactly how a Christian community should be, then a passage that we often look at around Pentecost, Acts chapter 2, verses 42 to 47, really comes to mind. I've added a little emphasis on the PowerPoint. And I'll leave you with this. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all of the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. Amen.